tile and click ceramic plank. Get 10 to 23% off all Dream Home X2O water-resistant laminate and 10% off all Builder's Pride and Virginia Millworks pre-finished hardwood. More from 39 cents and take an extra 10% off clearance at your local store. Plus special financing. Look for the yellow tag clearance deals at Lumber Liquidators today.
Hi, I'm Wayne Allyn for pre1933.com. I've been the single biggest BBB, backer, believer, and buyer of gold for over 15 years. But now I found a better way to buy gold. I found the Uber of gold. This company, pre1933.com, will forever change the way gold is sold. Pre1933.com is a wholesaler of pre-1933 gold. They have no salesman, zero commission, prices no one can compete with. Call 855-PRE-1933. That's toll free, 855-773-1933, or go to pre1933.com.
The federal government targeted sanctuary cities for a sweep of illegal immigrants. Here's Chris Barnes.
Federal agents say nearly 500 illegal immigrants were taken into custody during the nationwide immigration sweep that targeted sanctuary cities coast to coast. The agents arresting people in cities that limit cooperation with immigration authorities, cities like New York, L.A., and Baltimore. Immigration and Customs Enforcement authorities say more than 60% of those arrested were already convicted of crimes from assault to drunk driving. I'm Chris Barnes.
At least four people are dead and 20 injured after a suicide attack outside a Shiite mosque in Kabul. An Afghan hospital official confirmed the casualties from the attack today. Police said the attacker blew himself up on the street about 3,000 feet from the Husaniya Mosque. The attack took place just after Friday prayers as worshippers were on their way home. No one immediately took responsibility for the attack, which took place 2 days before the Muslim holy day of Ashura. USA Radio News.
Howdy, folks. Colonel Sanders from KFC here with some real news. My delicious world-famous original recipe fried chicken is available at a KFC near you. It has been and will be until the end of time. No matter what's happening in the world, you can trust that my original recipe chicken is always made with the living herbs and spices. Many unnamed sources agree. It's delicious. Get it in a KFC $10 chicken share and enjoy it with a friend. KFC, it's still finger-licking good. Limited time offer at participating KFCs. Prices may vary. Tax and substitutions extra.
National Guard units from around the country are mobilizing to head to Puerto Rico and the Caribbean to help in disaster repair. Mississippi, one of those states. Here's Randy Bell.
The Guard has been working all week trying to get some of its soldiers down there to help out, but it's facing the same kind of transportation problems.
We're working day and night trying to get flights in and out.
Lieutenant Colonel Jody Michael Smith says some of the soldiers left Mississippi yesterday headed for the U.S. Virgin Islands, and others will leave as soon as possible. They'll carry equipment to use to keep generators running and provide meals for other military personnel helping out in the hurricane recovery.
The advice we've been given from those who are on the ground is, hey, think worst-case scenario and come prepared, and that's what we've pretty much done.
About 200 Guard personnel will take part in that mission. Randy Bell in Jackson.
The United States finally has a new ambassador to Russia, former Utah governor. Here's Mark Mayfield.
The Senate confirmed Huntsman yesterday as the new ambassador to Russia in a vote that did not have a single objection. Huntsman previously served as the ambassador to China under former President Obama from 2009 to 2011. He was also the ambassador to Singapore during the presidencies of George H.W. Bush and Bill Clinton from 1992 to 1993. He served as governor of Utah from 2005 until 2009.
The U.S. planning to pull staff and family from the U.S. Embassy in Cuba. Multiple reports say the State Department will only leave behind essential personnel. This is USA Radio News.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, WHCR, DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
And now, it's the news.
You're listening to Now It's the News. I'm Derek Blair. Happy to be here this week, ladies and gentlemen. We will get to the interview soon. But let's begin with the strange news of the week. A social studies textbook in Saudi Arabia was recalled for including a photo depicting a Star Wars character next to a king. Don't put the king in the same category as the funny creatures from a far, far galaxy. The black and white photo by Saudi artist Abdullah Ashiri features the small green Jedi Yoda sitting next to King Faisal as he signed the United Nations Charter in San Francisco in 1945. Saudi Education Minister Ahmed El-Aissa apologized for the mistake and said measures were being taken to correct the error. You're listening to Now It's the News. I'm Derek Blair. I had an interesting experience within the last week or two of visiting a couple of major American cities and spending a little bit of time in each of their respective green areas. So I thought it would be fascinating to speak with Jill Jones. She is the author of Urban Forests, A Natural History of Trees and the People in the American Cityscape. Jill, welcome to Now It's the News. Thank you so much for being here.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Sure. So I visited New York City and Washington, D.C., spent a little bit of time in Central Park. They're two cities that deal very differently with trees and greenery and parks, aren't they?
Well, one is very historic, which is Washington, and is known as the City of Trees. Mm-hmm. And New York is just really distinguished itself as, I think this would be a surprise to most people because they don't think of New York as a tree city, but they have just planted a million trees and really transformed what a lot of the city looks like. Not so much the tourist parts, because I think those, especially places like Central Park, have always been very green, but there were many neighborhoods that really barely had trees, and those have been just transformed.
Right, and there's certainly you see areas that are entirely bereft, but once you delve into Central Park, it really is one of America's great urban forests. I mean, I can't think of a more high profile one that springs to mind. And maybe I'm just not thinking of the right places in Washington, D.C., but it seems a lot less bare. Certainly, there's the National Mall, which has trees on its edges, and the National Arboretum as well.
The great green place in Washington is Rock Creek Park.
Okay.
So it's quite vast and kind of wanders through the city.
Hmm.
I think downtown Washington around the mall, yeah, that's pretty concrete-y. But even Capitol Hill has a lot of memorial trees that are quite historic. So, I think there is that sense in the middle of New York you have Central Park, and then, of course, on the other side you have Riverside Park, and now you have the High Line. So, yes, New York, especially under Mayor Bloomberg, really, really made a big push to green itself in a way that I think is very noticeable to everyone who visits Manhattan these days. Quite charming.
When these cities were laid out, and a lot of cities on the eastern seaboard at the beginning of our country, what was the planning for greenery being within these large urban communities? I mean, what was the thought that was originally put into them, or was there?
So in New York, I think New York sort of grew organically, and as it moved north, and finally kind of hit the area of what is today Central Park, Andrew Jackson Downing, who was the original tree evangelist, and my book basically is sort of in two sections. One is the first urban tree movement, very successful, part of the progressive era, with a person like Andrew Jackson Downing kind of leading the way, and then others taking up in later time, you know, sort of late 1800s. You got Arbor Day going then, and the field of arboriculture was invented by John Davy, whose company existed this time. And then a lot of cities lost their trees to Dutch elm disease between sort of the 30s and the 60s. It's kind of a slow-rolling eco-disaster. So we're now in, you know, a second urban forestry movement. But the thing about Washington, D.C. is it was always intended to be a city surrounded by parks and greenery. But many, many things got cut down. But, it, you know, it is still a very, very green city, and they have a very high tree canopy. It just may not be all that obvious in that sort of what they call the monumental core.
Mm-hmm.
New York is, of course, you know, in a very grid system, and they certainly always had street trees. But I think it's Central Park and Riverside Park that, you know, give Manhattan a sense of being much greener than many other cities.
We're speaking with Jill Jones. She's the author of Urban Forests, A Natural History of Trees and People in the American Cityscape. How did urban planning in the sense of greenery progress as Europeans moved across the continent and built new cities that, you know, that haven't been around for necessarily 200 or more years?
Well, you know, I actually don't write about Denver in my book, but I will say I went there actually for an urban forestry conference, and it's an incredibly green city. I was told that every tree there was planted by a human being.
Mm-hmm.
So places of – and the same with Chicago. I mean, Chicago has a really significant urban forest,
mm-hmm.
and I do write about Chicago at, you know, at great length, in part because many things have happened there that are quite important. So Europeans came. They had a very sense of what a city should look like, and that city should always have parks, and it should always have street trees. And also, I mean, the United States, especially the Midwest, is quite hot compared to what anyone experienced in Europe. And the thing that's always been true about trees is that they are one of the few things that can really cool a city down and just, you know, give it this sense of loveliness. And one of the things that was really interesting to me as I was working on this book and really is embodied in the second urban forestry movement that we're in right now is that movement is really informed by lots of science and technology, like everything else in our world today.
Right.
And so we just know a huge amount about the urban forest, which we really didn't before. And the most interesting thing that we are learning about the urban forest is, one, that trees are a marker of affluence, which you kind of intuitively know, but mapping allows you to mm-hmm. really see this. So I write about L.A., and Bel Air has a 47% canopy, meaning, you know, what you see if you're a bird from above.
Right.
And South Central has about 6%. And that holds true in many, many cities. So a big part of what's happening now in urban forestry is this kind of environmental justice push where you may say that overall a city has a 47% tree canopy, but if you look more closely, you realize that's very heavily skewed to affluent neighborhoods. But the most, I think, compelling thing we're learning about trees and the urban forest is how much they affect human well-being. And
yeah.
that, you know, people who live in the presence of trees and have access to trees and the ability to sort of walk around and be among trees, just their stress levels are much lower. And so, you know, trees turn out to be quite essential for human health. So, you know, many people are planting trees because they moderate the climate and they're shady and they're lovely and beautiful. But all those things also really have a consequence just for human well-being. So
we have to take a quick break, but we'll be back in a moment with Jill Jones.
For more information on Now It's the News, go to nowitsthenews.com.
I'm Will Flitzer in the Situation Room, and you're listening to Now It's the News with Derek Blair.
This is Ed Lukasevic.
And Cindy Lukasevic at Dynavite.
This year, whenever you order a 90-day supply of Dynavite for your dog, we'll send you a free sample of one of the other doggy things we make.
Like Lico Chaps, Super Mega Fish Oil, or Doggo Suds Shampoo.
What's on your dog's wish list?
We'll offer a different freebie each week at Dynavite.com.
Don't you just love the sound of healthy, happy dogs?
Dynavite is nutrition.
Dynavite for life.
DINOVITE.com.
This report is brought to you by Bank of America. It's officially fall, which means football fans are lining up at stadiums across the country to cheer on their favorite teams. According to a Bank of America survey, of the Americans planning to attend a tailgate this football season, more than half plan to travel for a game. Jason Gaughan, Bank of America executive.
While traveling to away games can be expensive, you can offset the cost by using the Right Rewards card that lets you earn points towards travel on your everyday purchases. With the Bank of America Travel Rewards credit card, you earn 1.5 points for every dollar spent. Whether buying a morning coffee or a new pair of shoes, points that you earn from these purchases can add up and pay off in a big way when you put them toward a trip to your favorite team's away game.
For more information, visit bankofamerica.com/travelconnected. That's bankofamerica.com/travelconnected.
Well, here we are again, and I got to tell you, Jim, this match has me really concerned.
Here we have a powerful heavyweight, a train, weighing in at 6,000 tons. And this hasty, lightweight challenger, a car, at just 1.5 tons.
This does not bode well for the car or the people in it.
It's no contest. Every day, people are injured or killed trying to beat a train at rail crossings. See tracks, think train.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
This is Tony Clark, para planner at Patton Heidi & Associates. Americans believe they should be in charge of their own future, how they will live tomorrow. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has worked for their clients' futures, helping millions of Americans retire on their terms, when they want, where they want, doing what they want. Today, Patton Heidi & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. We are ready to help you put a confident retirement more within reach. Put the strength of a leader in retirement planning to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Patton Heidi & Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you pursue your retirement goals. Call today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor, Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC.
And now, it's the news.
We're speaking with Jill Jones. She's the author of Urban Forests. I grew up in Marin County, California, which is just north of San Francisco. San Francisco, at least to my eye, and I'm sure you know more about the percentages than I do. But it strikes me as a pretty green city as far as like the actual parks and forests within the city itself. But also with regard to the San Francisco Bay Area, there is so much intermingled within suburbia as far as just open spaces go. It seems fairly unique to me in that way. Is that the case, and how does that impact people's lives and honestly the ecosystem in general?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, people always think of California as a place where you can be outside in nature you know, relatively quickly. And I think there always has been a very high value in California to enjoying nature. I mean, it's just an outdoors place. And, I mean, as soon as you said you were from Marin County, I thought, Muir Woods.
Yes, absolutely.
I mean, that's just a magical place. And one of the things I have noticed, I mean, when I've been out in San Francisco in recent years, I mean, I actually myself always try and go to Muir Woods. I mean, it is almost impossible to get near the place anymore.
Yeah.
And that strikes me. I mean, and I notice the same thing at the High Line in New York. Now, the High Line is, you know, relatively brand new. It's been around, what, 10 years or something. And at times they have to close the entrances because it is so mobbed. I mean, my own sense is that, one, I mean, there's many more people in the world and in this country than there used to be. But I think that as the majority of people are living in cities, there's just this hunger to have access to nature. And my own sense with cities is that, you know, really smart mayors, people like Bloomberg, mm-hmm. are looking to essentially retrofit their cities with nature. So, and you see this going on all over the country where suddenly we're trying to get access to, you know, rivers that we haven't had access to and all of these bike trails along the rivers. I mean, people just realize that they need to be out in nature, you know, for their own enjoyment and you know, well-being. So
right.
a smart mayor is someone who's making it, you know, easier to bike, easier to get to the woods, easier to be along a river. And, you know, trees just always are going to play a role in this because they, I mean, the other thing that's so interesting is that trees have really been redefined as green infrastructure. I mean, if you look at a city, the biggest, most imposing aspect of a city after the built environment really are its trees.
Right.
The urban forest is no different than the bridges and, you know, the subways and
right.
all the rest of
it. It's really part of the infrastructure, just like everything else. And it's something
yeah.
that people care about and something that people notice. And when it's not there, and maybe it's not quite as immediate and urgent as, say, the subway, which, having gone to New York, I can make a couple of comments about as well. It's still something that people notice because, you know, you just have that sense of well-being. We're talking about largely these big cities. Is there anything in smaller tiers of cities or suburban areas that can be done to improve the direction that things are going? And what is it looking like on that front?
Well, I mean, you know, one thing that I always think is that one of the major things you can do to change your cityscape is to change the parking ordinances vis-a-vis trees. I mean, if you look at any city or suburb, I mean, way too much of it has been paved over to make parking lots. And some cities now have changed their rules. I mean, every so often, all parking lots have to get, you know, repaved.
Mm-hmm.
And for instance, Sacramento has done this, that when you redo your parking lot, you now have to, have to have X number of trees.
Huh.
Which one makes the parking lot a lot cooler. Mm-hmm. Many cities have got stormwater problems now because they're too paved over. And mm-hmm. you know, if you start opening up tree wells or tree lawns in parking lots, you're beginning to address that issue. And I mean, that when I talk about that we need to go back and start retrofitting cities with nature, I mean, you know, the parking lots are a very easy place. The other, you know, really easy place, and L.A. is doing this, is they are slowly but surely completely redoing all of their schoolyards.
Wow.
So, you know, your kind of standard American schoolyard, which has a lot of pavement and a lot of stormwater runs off of it going, God, you know, in the case of L.A., it just goes right out to the sea, which is crazy because L.A. needs that water. And they're just completely remaking them to, you know, really be these beautiful play spaces and, you know, kind of stormwater storage and, you know, lots of trees and you know, redoing the parking lots in that way. So it's not about per se creating, you know, create entire new parks.
Right.
It's really about taking the spaces that are already in neighborhoods, you know, and making them lovely, you know, making them park-like. And there's an entire sort of movement of doing that. And it really usually has to do with the powers that be being persuaded that this is better than just, you know, doing a standard repaving job. I mean, what brought this on in L.A. was the fact that they do need to start capturing rainwater for use in the city, and all of the city, or I guess many of the city schoolyards, were going to need to be redone. So, you know, what were you going to do? Were you just going to repave them all over again and, you know, put in some new play equipment, or were you going to just really transform the grounds? And, of course, and that's a huge benefit for the neighborhood because, the you know, neighbors can come in and enjoy that also.
Right. Now, it's sort of the urban planning equivalent of sneaking your Brussels sprouts underneath the mashed potatoes, if you will. get them in there one way or another because it's good for you. But, you know, once they're there, it's not so bad, and people appreciate them. You know, whether they're all together in one place or whether they kind of break up a more sharp landscape. And
right. Well, I think you'll notice if you ever go to a parking lot, wherever the trees are, that's where the cars are.
Absolutely. I can imagine in the middle of the San Joaquin Valley in Sacramento during a hot summer, those trees are going to be very popular, and they should be for a number of reasons. We've been speaking with Jill Jones. She is the author of Urban Forests, A Natural History of Trees and the People in the American Cityscape. Jill, thanks so much for taking the time today, a really important topic, and I appreciate you writing about it and being here to talk with us about it.
All right. Well, as I say, it's clear that trees are essential to human health, and we all should be looking at trees with a fond eye and trying to plant big ones, because the bigger they are, sort of the more benefit we get from them.
Indeed. Jill, thanks so much for taking the time. All the best.
Okay. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
I'm Wolf Blitzer in the Situation Room, and you're listening to Now It's the News with Derek Blair.
This is a special alert to consumers who owe back taxes to the IRS.
Due to the financial hardship consumers are facing during the decline in the U.S. economy, the Internal Revenue Service has made it easier to settle tax problems. An open phone line has been established by National Tax Relief. Grab a pen or put this number in your cell phone, but call 1-800-210-0311 today. That's 1-800-210-0311. When you call, you'll get information and see if you qualify. If you owe back taxes to the IRS and can't afford to pay them back, there's no need to fear anymore. You may qualify for a program that could settle your tax problems and save you money. For free information and to see if you qualify, call National Tax Relief today at 1-800-210-0311. That's 1-800-210-0311. 1-800-210-0311.
USA Radio News with Jason Wirt.
Probably has never been seen for something like this. This is an island surrounded by water, big water, ocean water.
President Trump updating the media on the recovery in Puerto Rico and the damage that was suffered to the island after Hurricane Maria. The president emphasized infrastructure on the island has suffered a major hit. Trump said Puerto Ricans have turned to taking care of themselves and their families, so it's up to the U.S. to bring security and transportation crews to get things going again. The death toll is now at 12 after the air conditioning at a Florida nursing home failed during Hurricane Irma earlier this month. Police say 57-year-old Dolores Biamonte had similar symptoms to other patients after she was transported from the nursing home to a hospital. Biamonte's death is included in the total deaths linked to the air conditioning failure. You're listening to USA Radio News.
Getting your flu shot at Walgreens is easier than ever. Just walk right in, and there's no cost to you with a $0 copay with most insurance. Plus, when you get a flu shot, you help provide a life-saving vaccine to a child in need through the UN Foundation. Swing by your local Walgreens anytime to get a flu shot and help make a difference. Get a shot, give a shot. It's that easy. Walgreens, at the corner of happy and healthy.
Through August 31st, 2018, for every immunization given, Walgreens will donate 22 cents up to $2 million. Vaccine restrictions apply. Talk to your pharmacist to learn more.
You're listening to Love Advice with Leanne. Caller, you're on the air.
Hi, Leanne. Long-time listener, first-time caller. Why, in your professional opinion, do you never take my calls off the air?
Is this Carl?
Yep, it's Carl. I mean, we had a few dates. Everything was great, I thought.
Well, you know, when you switch to GEICO, you could save a lot of money on car insurance.
Okay, awesome.
You should call them.
I will.
GEICO, because saving 15% or more on car insurance is always a great answer.
And now, it's the news.
Listening to Now It's the News, I'm Derek Blair. We're speaking today with Catherine Smith. She is the author of The Gatekeeper, Missy LeHand, FDR, and the Untold Story of the Partnership That Defined a Presidency. Catherine, welcome to Now It's the News. Thank you so much for being here.
Good to be with you.
In this day and age, there is a very extensive set of staffing around any president of the United States that has built up steadily in the course of the post-war era and up into the present day. Certainly that was not the case, not nearly to the extent that we know it back in FDR's day. And one of the key people for him was Missy LeHand, key to his presidency and key to him personally. Tell us who Missy LeHand was and how she came to work for FDR.
Okay. Missy LeHand was FDR's personal secretary, and she was the first woman to be a private or personal secretary to a president in U.S. history. She came to work for him in 1920 when he was running for vice president on the Democratic Party ticket. And after he lost the election, he and James Cox lost to Warren Harding and Calvin Coolidge. She came to work for him on Wall Street at his law firm. And she just stayed with him until she couldn't work anymore.
So she knew him prior to when he came down with polio. Is that correct?
Yes. She went to work for him in Wall Street in January of 1921, and then he had the polio attack in August of that year. So she was a real crucial figure during his recovery from polio. She was the person who spent the most time with him in Warm Springs, where he established the Polio Rehabilitation Center. It was just a real crucial part of his success and return to political life.
As anyone who has studied the life of Franklin Delano Roosevelt is probably aware, the relationship between he and his wife Eleanor Roosevelt was strained and distant and more of a working partnership after she discovered that he had been having an affair with her personal secretary. Social secretary. Explain it, if you could, the role that Missy LeHand played in his life and his recovery from polio and his political rehabilitation at that time, in a way perhaps that Eleanor did not.
how she fits in with that. It's interesting that FDR had a fairly small inner circle, and the people in it played a real key role in as a bridge and a buffer between him and his wife. And Missy was one of the people who was the most important in this area. His political advisor, Louis Howe, was another. The Roosevelts had almost divorced over his affair. He apparently wanted to marry this beautiful younger woman, but his mother said she would disinherit him, and his political advisor, Louis Howe, said that he would never be elected to any office if he left his wife and five children for a beautiful younger woman. So they decided to go on, but it was a partnership, as you said. They admired each other a lot, but Eleanor really was very successful in carving out her own identity and her own life. And she seemed to be perfectly happy to have Missy keep her husband company, serve as her backup hostess, teach us so many things that had been the role of a wife and a first lady before. And Missy understood the limits of what she was supposed to do and seemed to have been perfectly happy to fill those roles.
We're speaking with Catherine Smith. She is the author of The Gatekeeper, Missy LeHand, FDR, and the untold story of the partnership that defined a presidency. There's been a lot of speculation over the years that that their relationship, Franklin and Missy's, may have been something more than secretary, more than friends, may have been romantic. In your research, been able to determine that at all?
There's no way to confirm that. I like to quote one of her great nieces, who says that there's no reason to think they were, but there's just really no way to know. But what's happened over time is people focused on that, and it's obscured her larger role as an advisor and a confidant and a real powerhouse in Washington. The people who worked around her admired her tremendously. She was very smart. Knew Roosevelt's mind, and was just very good at working with him and handling him and being his bridge to other people. So it's kind of, I always get asked that question, do you think they did? And I really think, Derek, that says more about us than about them, that we're so curious about it. But there's no way to know. One thing I did discover is she had a much longer-term romantic relationship with William Bullitt, who was one of our U.S. ambassadors than has ever been supposed before. She was involved with him mostly long distance from 1933 until 1940. Hmm. And so that's almost the whole time she was in the White House.
Interesting. And let's talk about that role. How did it change once Roosevelt went first to Albany as governor of New York and then and went to Washington as president?
As president. Well, she had been with him almost constantly from 1921 on, and he spent many, many weeks and months away from home. He rented a houseboat in the Florida Keys, and then he bought it with another one with a friend, and he'd spend the winters there fishing, and Missy went with him as his hostess and companion, and then he bought property at Warm Springs, and she lived down there. When he was elected governor of New York in 1928, Eleanor invited her to come and live in the governor's mansion with them, and it was something that suited all three of them really well because it gave Roosevelt a staff member on site, it gave Missy a free place to live, and it gave Eleanor a backup hostess so she could continue doing so many of the things she loved to do, including teaching school in New York 3 days a week. And it was just kind of natural that should continue once they moved into the White House. But the interesting thing about the Roosevelts is lots of people came to live with them. Louis Howe was married with two children, and he moved in with the Roosevelts at the White House. Mrs. Roosevelt had a close friend, Lorena Hickok, and she invited Lorena to come live in the White House, which she did. And then some years later, FDR's aide, Harry Hopkins, came to dinner one night, didn't feel well, and stayed for 3.5 years. So the idea of having non-family members living with the Roosevelts was just not that unusual. It would be today, but it wasn't then. So Missy was just on duty 24/7. She worked at she had the only desk, the only office adjoining Roosevelt's, worked right outside his office from, 9 to 5, and then she'd be the hostess at his daily cocktail party, which she called the children's hour. And then she might have dinner with the Roosevelts or the White House family, as they called it, and then she might sit up in the president's study with him until 10 or 11 o'clock, just talking or working with his stamp collection or whatever. So she was really probably spent more time with him than just about anybody in his circle.
For more information on Now It's the News, go to nowitsthenews.com.
This report is brought to you by Bank of America. It's officially fall, which means football fans are lining up at stadiums across the country to cheer on their favorite teams. According to a Bank of America survey, of the Americans planning to attend a tailgate this football season, more than half plan to travel for a game. Jason Gaughan, Bank of America executive.
While traveling to away games can be expensive, you can offset the cost by using the Right Rewards card that lets you earn points towards travel on your everyday purchases. With the Bank of America Travel Rewards credit card, you earn 1.5 points for every dollar spent. Whether buying a morning coffee or a new pair of shoes, points that you earn from these purchases can add up and pay off in a big way when you put them toward a trip to your favorite team's away game.
For more information, visit bankofamerica.com/travelconnected. That's bankofamerica.com/travelconnected.
Hi, I'm Joe Peters. Buying or selling a property can be one of the most expensive undertakings you face in your lifetime, and selecting the right realtor to help you through this process can dramatically affect your success or your failure. I have personally helped hundreds of buyers and sellers through this process in achieving their dreams and goals in 100 in Somerset County areas over the past 10 years. I believe that this experience should be a smooth, seamless one for you and not a roller coaster ride. But the best judgment as to whether or not I deliver this to my customers is their reactions in their own words.
One of the things we liked about Joe was that he would return calls within minutes if he wasn't able to pick up.
You know, Joe guided us through the process of selling our home and made a complicated transaction appear seamless.
How do I accomplish this? By approaching every transaction from a business perspective. Initially, I try to fully understand your goals and dreams and make them my own. Then, I go out and take the mass amounts of data that we have and distill them down to a few understandable action points to be considered. Finally, I control the entire process through technology to ensure that we're not going to hit any speed bumps along the way. The end result to you is a smooth, rewarding customer experience. Let me show you how to take my level of professional expertise and put it to work for you in achieving your real estate goals and dreams. I can be reached at 908-238-0118. Thanks for your time.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HuntertonChamberRadio.com, brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
I'm Andy Ross. I'm chairman of the Ambassadors Committee of the Chamber. As members of the Ambassadors Committee, we contact new and renewing members of the Chamber to get their feedback on their Chamber experience and make them feel more at home with the Chamber.
Hunterdon Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
The news.
Authorities have identified a suspect in an Ohio County Fair burglary who took a bite out of Best of Show baked goods during the heist. The Plain Dealer reports that officials say whoever broke into an exhibit at the Geauga County Fair in Northeast Ohio last week has a masked face, soft fur, and walks on four legs. Uh-oh! Wanted posters are now on display for a raccoon or raccoons that left paw prints on baked goods judged to be the best in show among the more than 1,000 entries submitted at the 195-year-old fair. Fair Board Director Paul Harris says the raccoon took a little sample here and a little sample there from seven of the best 11 of the 11 best of show entries, including breads, muffins, scones, pies, and a chocolate cake. We're speaking with Catherine Smith. She's the author of The Gatekeeper. What was, you referred to earlier the level of power that Missy had in the White House. Explain how that came about, how her position gave her that power, and how she worked in the White House.
It's kind of hard to find Missy's fingerprints. I wish I could say, oh, yes, Missy was the one who thought up the Social Security Act, but she was more a person, someone who got the right people into FDR's, under his notice. This is kind of a weird story, but the guy who was supposed to be his attorney general died on the way to the inauguration. And he was a 75-year-old senator from Montana, and it was a really crucial job, obviously, and especially because it was going to involve the banking crisis, which was the whole banking system was about ready to go over a cliff. And he had just married a much younger woman, and they were on their way on the train, and he died. It was said to be presumption beyond his powers. So anyway, nobody could think of a replacement, and Missy recommended Homer Cummings, who was an attorney who had been the Democratic Party national chairman, and he took the job. So it's kind of interesting that, and he stayed for years. He was the one who plucked J. Edgar Hoover out of obscurity and put him in charge of the FBI.
Interesting.
May not want to be thankful for that, but Hoover did a good job in lots of ways. And she did other things like that. She weighed in on Supreme Court appointments. She introduced FDR to Tommy Corcoran, who became his White House lobbyist. And he was a very, very crucial person to getting legislation through. And she also operated his backdoor access to the Oval Office. So if anyone had a hard time getting through the regular appointments secretary, FDR would say, oh, just go see Ms. Lahan. She'll slip you in the back door. So there was just a lot of trust there. Right. And, you know, you think about in the evenings when they're talking about what happened during the day and this or that, and he's using her as a sounding board, and I'm sure that she had times when she said, you know, FD, I don't think that's such a good idea, and here's why. The people in FDR's inner circle in the White House were from very humble backgrounds. Most of them didn't have college educations. They were from working-class families. And they kept him grounded and tied to the forgotten man that the New Deal promised to help. And Missy was a great example of that. Her family just were from very modest means.
It's amazing to hear how much power resided in someone who nominally was just a personal secretary. Is there anything that you know of in presidential history that's comparable outside of someone who was appointed or at least, you know, generally designated as someone who was a counselor to the president?
What you got to remember, though, is secretary was the ultimate job title in the White House. There was not a chief of staff title.
Okay.
So, you know, at the White House today, they've just run amok with all these fancy titles, you know, senior counselor to the president and, you know, ultra senior or whatever, and, you know, special counsel on the strategic counsel to the
right.
What do they mean? In FDR's White House, he had four secretaries. He had Louis Howe, who was his political secretary. He had a press secretary, an appointment secretary, and he had Missy, who did everything else. So to be secretary to a president, it's a pretty big deal.
Yeah.
You know, kind of think about Secretary of Commerce, Secretary of the Interior, when you think of that kind of secretary. But to answer your question, there had never been a woman with that kind of influence other than a first lady. And it took a long time for it to see anything like that surface. I really look back to the women who worked for George W. Bush, Karen Hughes and Condoleezza Rice and Harriet Myers, and, of course, Valerie Jarrett under President Obama is a Missy sort of character. I'm interested in Hope Hicks, who is the latest appointee to communications director of the Trump White House. And she seems to be a sort of Missy-like character to me, very low-key, under the radar, doesn't, you know, put herself out there on cable news interviews. And,
Interesting. But it
seems to be very much trusted. Yeah.
Right. It seems like it took it it took 60 years to get to the point where a woman was in that close circle of power to the president of the United States.
Think how long, many more years it may take before we get a woman in the Oval Office.
Indeed. It's a very good point. we're speaking with Catherine Smith, who is the author of The Gatekeeper. How did their relationship progress throughout the administration? And describe briefly, if you could, the health crisis that ended her tenure in the White House.
Well, Lily Howe is the person we think of as the first chief of staff under Roosevelt. He became very ill and died in 1936, and Missy took on so many of his tasks that she became what we would think of today as White House chief of staff. One example is that after FDR went to bed at night, nobody could wake him up without Missy's permission. So when a call came in on September 1st, 1939, saying Hitler's invaded Poland, they called her. And she said, yeah, I think we can wake him up for that one. So, but Missy had had heart disease and rheumatic fever as a child, and it had compromised her heart. So between her endless days, the heart disease, all the smoking she did, they all smoked and drank, she just began to have really serious heart issues. And she had a major stroke in 1941 when she was 44, went home to Massachusetts and died a couple of years later when she was 47. So tough.
And how did, as I understand, after her illness and after her passing, Franklin Roosevelt was of some assistance to her and her family.
He did. He always paid her medical bills all through her illness. Just sent lots of gifts and cards. He'd send movie passes and things like that because he knew she loved to go to the movies. But he never saw her again after she left the White House. And a lot of people have judged him real harshly for that. After he died 9 months after she did, it was discovered that he'd left half the income of his estate to Eleanor and half to what he described as my friend Marguerite Lahan for her medical treatment. So he wanted to be sure she was taken care of should he die first. And the Roosevelts paid for her funeral. They bought an endowment, apparently, because they're still paying for the upkeep of Missy's grave in Massachusetts. So
goodness.
I think it really was a huge validation of how important.
I'm sorry, are you still there? Hello?
It's bringing Missy to life. She was a delightful person. She was very funny and very glamorous. She went to all the White House events and the embassy parties. She just had a closet full of evening gowns and was just also a very nice person. People liked her. She wasn't a backstabbing kind of White House aide as we often think of today.
Yeah.
She got ahead by being nice.
Well, if only we could bring back that spirit today, I think we could solve a lot of the issues around the presidency.
If we could only bring back FDR from the dead, eh?
Well, you know, I would suggest that as well, but we'll leave that for another time. Catherine, thank you so much for spending the time. The name of the book is The Gatekeeper, Missy LeHand, FDR, and the Untold Story of the Partnership That Defined a Presidency, a figure that a lot of folks know about, but probably not enough about, and an excellent story, an excellent read. And thank you for writing it, and thank you for speaking with us today.
Thank you. I enjoyed it very much.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
All the best. Enjoy the beach. Bye-bye.
Happy trails. Happy trails.
That's all the time we have this week on Now It's the News. Now It's the News was created and produced by Derek Blair and Godric Rocklin. For more information, go to Twitter, at Now It's the News. And until next week, I remain yours truly, Derek Blair.
This report is brought to you by Express Scripts. For the 10,000 people who become Medicare eligible every day, choosing a Part D prescription drug plan is stressful, particularly when they learn choices made when first enrolling could have long-term financial impact. For current beneficiaries, reevaluating their plan is key to ensure 2018 coverage still meets their pharmacy needs. Rebecca Rabbit, PharmD.
There will be several updates to Medicare Part D plan offerings in 2018, so newly eligible and current beneficiaries need to start preparing now to be ready to enroll in a plan that best suits their needs. This includes creating a list of medications and local pharmacies and mapping out annual medical and pharmacy expenses. This information will make it easier to evaluate current plans and explore new ones when information becomes available on October 1st. Plan enrollment begins October 15th and it ends December 7th, so it's important to start early and carefully evaluate options to choose the best plan.
For more information and tips on choosing the right Medicare Part D plan, visit roadmapformedicare.com or medicare.gov.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com, brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
The news is sponsored by the Hunterdon Medical Center. Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4-HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
USA Radio News with Jason Wirt.
Probably has never been seen for something like this. This is an island surrounded by water, big water, ocean water.
President Trump updating the media on the recovery in Puerto Rico and the damage that was suffered to the island after Hurricane Maria. The president emphasized infrastructure on the island has suffered a major hit. Trump said Puerto Ricans have turned to taking care of themselves and their families, so it's up to the U.S. to bring security and transportation crews to get things going again. The death toll is now at 12 after the air conditioning at a Florida nursing home failed during Hurricane Irma earlier this month. Police say 57-year-old Dolores Biamonte had similar symptoms to other patients after she was transported from the nursing home to a hospital. Biamonte's death is included in the total deaths linked to the air conditioning failure. You're listening to USA Radio News.
For many businesses, hiring is tough, which makes it critical to choose the right place to post your jobs. You need qualified candidates fast and on budget, and you don't want to sign a long-term contract or pay upfront fees. That's why you need Indeed.com, the world's number one job site. Independent research shows Indeed delivers 6 times more hires than any other job site. You can post a job in minutes and even set up screener questions to help you zero in on qualified candidates. You can review applicants, take notes, and schedule interviews, all from an easy-to-use online dashboard. For a limited time, Indeed is offering new users a $50 credit to make their first job listing a sponsored job with premium visibility so more candidates will see it. You want to make a great hire fast, and this exclusive offer gives you a head start. Find out why over 3 million businesses use Indeed for hiring. To redeem this offer, go to Indeed.com/radio. That's Indeed.com/radio. Terms, conditions, and quality standards apply.
Sundown marks the beginning of one of the holiest days for Judaism. Here's Chris Barnes.
New Jersey Rabbi Chaim Pupko says it's the Day of Atonement, a very solemn day of introspection, fasting, and praying.
On the other hand, it's also a day of joy. It's a day in which we feel confident our relationship with God will be restored through the holiday of Yom Kippur.
The rabbi says Jews ask God for forgiveness for sins committed during the previous year, though they first must make amends with anyone they've wronged. I'm Chris Barnes.
President Trump now has an invitation to visit the Dr. Seuss Museum in Springfield, Massachusetts, after a librarian in Cambridgeport gained attention for turning down donated books from First Lady Melania Trump as part of National Read a Book Day. Liberal librarian Liz Phillips-Cierto says she disagrees with the president's school policies. Springfield Mayor Dominic Sarno released a statement on Thursday slamming the librarian's comments, praising Melania Trump for donating the books. USA Radio News.
Hi, I'm Jay Farner, CEO of Quicken Loans. Every day people ask me, can I still take advantage of today's low rates? Is it still a good time to refinance? The answer is yes. Now's a great time to call Quicken Loans at 800-QUICKEN. The rate today on a 30-year fixed-rate mortgage is 3.875%, APR 4.05%. Call us today at 800-QUICKEN or go to quickenloans.com. That's 800-QUICKEN.
Call for cost information and conditions. Equal housing lender. Licensed in all 50 states. NMLSConsumerAccess.org, number 3030.
A major cruise line is gaining praise for their efforts to rescue trapped people in Puerto Rico. Here's Mark Mayfield.
Royal Caribbean.